All right, coming at you live, the Presidio Bitcoin Jam podcast with Steve, DK, and Max. Going to be recorded here weekly at the Presidio Bitcoin studio just behind this wall. Please be sure to tune in for future events and all the other podcasts coming right here from our studio. Guys, take it away.
Woo. All right, thank you. Thanks, everybody, for coming. I recognize so many faces, and I'm sure I've got some new faces to meet. So thanks for making it out. This is not a panel. These are actually just two of my good friends, and we literally, we hang out in chat on group text all the time about how do you process the world? The world is so messy online today. You know, you get information from all these different sources, and it's hard to know like what is real and what are the motivations behind the people writing the things. And, you know, Steve and I have been friends for almost 20 years, and we've digested technology problems together in this kind of almost Socratic discussion of like why, and mostly on bike rides. Max and I have been friends for years, and a fair number of sauna sessions have been similar.
Sauna maximalist.
He's a sauna maximalist. Banya.lol. So the point of the reason that we want to do a podcast and a live stream at that is because we're trying to digest the world, make sense of the world real time. And we're all Bitcoiners. We care a lot about the topics of Bitcoin and Noster, but we're trying to just understand how is the world work. And we're not trying to tell you how you should think. We're just trying to share the way that we're thinking about these things and how we're figuring the world out together. So that's kind of the beginning of it. Now, I know Steve has a ton of celebrity, especially with this crowd. So I always thought it was like my brother, and everybody here is like, oh, wow, Steve Lee. But you already know Steve, so I'm going to start with Max. Just to make sure that we don't ever introduce ourselves to each other in the group chat. But just because this is a little bit of a different format, you're all sitting here. Max, can you just give us a little bit about why Bitcoin? What are you up to?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I think I know a lot of you guys, and the ones I don't know, I hope I get to meet later tonight. I have a lot of, I guess, diverse interests, and over time, I guess Bitcoin is one of the things that's common to many of them. But I'll just say, I mean, I read about Bitcoin in 2011, thought it was very interesting, completely ignored it, which I obviously had not. But since then, you know, I'm very interested in understanding what is reality. I'm very interested in understanding what is evolution, how do systems evolve. And I think, you know, maybe three things that have really stuck with me and guided me on what I'm doing right now. One is I, you know, come from the energy industry. I'm both a sort of a Bitcoin maximalist, a sauna maximalist, apparently, and also a solar maximalist, which is very different, I think, than a lot of people and what you hear in the energy world today. But I got really obsessed with this idea that solar was falling down a cliff, and as was storage, and that eventually would be the cheapest source of energy in the world. And so through all of that, I eventually rediscovered Bitcoin as energy-backed money. And so one of my core theses is that there's only one currency in the known universe. It's joules, it's calories, it's kilowatt hours. Many of the greatest minds in human history, Tesla, Edison, Ford, Buckminster Fuller, my favorite, they all saw this coming. And so that was a big eureka moment for me. Number two was I lived in Mexico for a long time, about 5 years. And, you know, to that point, I saw a lot of my friends, you know, not able to use payment and saving systems. That was a big thing. And then I think since then, number three, I've just become really interested in this idea, evolutionary wise, of what does it look like for the next life form to evolve? And I think the big thing that I'm sort of wrestling with and thinking a lot about these days is all of the antiquated structures that we've had, corporations and nations and states, I don't think really, they don't really fit the mold of what's coming next. And I think what I see in Bitcoin now with Noster, some of the open intelligence stuff that Jack was talking about, is I think we're moving past corporations and states, and I think we're moving to a global commons. And I think of Bitcoins as commons monies. And, you know, I love building businesses on top. By day, I'm a venture capitalist, and I've invested in about 50 companies building on Bitcoin, Noster, and Lightning. But I think the big core idea to me is when that next life form evolves, and I think it's going to be humans, I think it's going to be agents together, I think it has to happen on a commons, or otherwise it's going to be pretty unsavory and limited. So, and that's the name of my fund is Hivemind, hivemind.vc. You can read more about what I do there.
And the podcast, your own podcast is called Ideas from the Edge.
Oh, yeah. So. If you guys want something out there, Ideas from the Edge. We do talk about Bitcoin and Nostr a lot, but I'm very interested in evolution. I'm very interested in, lately I've been obsessed with the Mayans and a bunch of ancient civilizations. So you can get your fill on all kinds of crazy things.
So Steve, everybody knows you, but do you want to tell us a little bit of context, like why you're friends with us?
Wow, you're really putting me on the spot here. Yeah, well, as David said, we have ridden, we've probably ridden like 20,000 miles on bikes, and we've run thousands of miles together too. So we met at Google 2 decades ago, and been sort of a fitness buddy since, but also technologist nerds. And then Max, I think we first met when you were doing Bitcoin surveys in Mexico. Yeah. And then we just got connected through that.
Yeah.
And ever since then. But the main thing I'd say about what I'm excited about this show ongoing is it's a goal we have with this show is consistent with the goal for Presidio Bitcoin, and that's outreach to Silicon Valley. So Silicon Valley institutions, big tech companies, Stanford and UC Berkeley, EFF, all these important institutions that we feel, and I think probably everyone here feels like, should absolutely understand Bitcoin and see how powerful potential is. And how. But the reality is there's a huge gap between Silicon Valley community and Bitcoin communities. I don't think these communities generally understand each other, and they should. So the three of us hopefully are suited to help with that. We all come from Silicon Valley, have worked in Silicon Valley, can speak that language, but are in our hearts, you know, Bitcoiners, and now are, and I, at least the two of us, are day jobs are Bitcoin. So if we're successful with this show, our primary audience is people at big tech in Silicon Valley. Understanding Bitcoin better.
And we want to be like a home for when people hear about, oh, I thought there's a thing you can do with crypto or Web3. We want to be a home. Hey, come hang out with us. We'll share some other stories. There's other ways to do these things. And hopefully people can learn. Like I know I see Shazan out in the audience. He actually was in undergrad and he was surrounded by people who are all crypto Web3. And he's like, this is crazy. Once you look at it, this stuff doesn't make sense. Like Bitcoin is the thing. That's the innovation. And so he explained to me that he felt very frustrated that he didn't have a community and nobody's ideas made sense to him. And now I think there's probably people over at Berkeley or Stanford or, you know, Hacker or wherever in the mission who has an idea and wants to add payments or money to an application idea they have, but they don't know who to talk to or where to start. So I hope that this kind of bridge idea, like we have enough of a foot in that side of the world, and when we have enough of a foot in this side of the world, and I hope that we can sort of be that bridge. And just like if we share the ideas and we sort of share candid discussion of like, how do we process work? Like we've chatted before about the Willow, you know, the Google announcement about Willow and quantum computing. That thing hits and we're like, what is this? Does it matter? Is it 10 years off? You know, I think understanding. And, you know, like Jack was just relieved from the claim of Satoshi today by Jameson Lopp. I don't know if you guys read that yet. He did a really good detailed analysis about why Jack is not Satoshi. And so like one of the things he does kind of a time by time, and I think Jack went on stage somewhere and gave a talk. And at the same time he was giving a talk, Satoshi was on Bitcoin Talk talking about quantum resistance.
But Jack had an AI agent back then.
Satoshi is an AI, guys. Come on.
So I think there's like an opportunity to be that bridge and be kind of a home.
Yeah. I mean, two things I want to add to that. It was really shocking to me. So before I started my own fund focused on Bitcoin, Lightning, and Nostr, I was at a different fund and we invested in all the crypto projects, all the Ethereum stuff. And it was shocking to me. At that time, I was trying to be very open-minded. And I mentioned this to some of y'all before, but I asked every project that we tried to invest in, I said, do you run a full node for your ecosystem for Ethereum? And do you know how many said they did? Literally zero. And that's when I was like, this is like fraudulent.
Afuera.
Yeah. Or like, what? Like, or these guys have no idea what's going on. Either way, it's pretty scary. And then I had a dinner with folks from Blockchain at Berkeley. I know there's some great Berkeley builders here. And literally every single one, this was 2022, I told them, well, I only invest in the Lightning Network. And they all said, oh, but that died in 2018. I was like, died? It hadn't even started. What are you talking about? Like, so I think there's just like this tremendous opportunity. There are like, you know, the best builders in the world, places like Stanford or Berkeley, bring them in here, show them, no, it's not dead. There's a ton happening. And then the second thing, my own personal goal is I really think the AI thing is much bigger than most people realize. Yep. You know, and all of it, I mean, at the end of the day, it's happening, I guess, in China too, but right here in San Francisco. And I don't know if even you guys know this, but in 2019, I was living with a bunch of my friends who were early at OpenAI. And at that point, it was still open. And they were able to show me things like the early GPT, and they really believed in open source. And it was awesome. All my friends, and we talked about it. Now they've all since left, of course. And anyone that I talked to from that world, you know, first of all, they've gone much more centralized, or they got so rich, they're just kind of retired now. But when I tell them, well, I had this vision of like maybe agents are going to work together and to be a collective decentralized inference and intelligence network, you know, the first thing they tell me is, oh, please, not more of that crypto crap. Like, please not again. No more of this crypto crap. It's like, no, you don't understand. It's Bitcoin. No, please don't. And so if we can somehow in this space engage the best AI builders in the world and show them like, no, you actually can build decentralized intelligence, and no, we're not trying to scam you, I would view that a huge win for us and hopefully humanity.
Yeah, and I think some of the centralized platforms don't even necessarily hold themselves to the same standards. I saw the, did you see the Stripe? I think it was like their annual report that they published. And they kind of had a whole section on stable coins, but they kind of just give it a pass and say, you know, they're decentralized. It's like, well, let's peel that back. They're not decentralized in the way that we think about decentralized. So I think it's good to have a place where we can talk about those kinds of things. Like, what is our stable coins decentralized? Like, the Collisons think so. Do you think so, Steve?
I mean, more so than like PayPal. But obviously not to the degree, not to the degree of Bitcoin. But it more so in that you can have a self-custody mobile wallet. The token representing that dollar is self-custodied. There's some benefit, to that. But at the end of the day, as mentioned earlier, in the last segment, there, you know, that money can still be frozen, and there's already plenty of examples of that. Tether freezes money, you know, quite frequently. So not in that way. One thing I wanted to mention quick, yeah, so everyone knows, another characteristic of our show is that there's audience engagement. So now we typically are doing live streaming on Fridays, and so people will do text chat with either commentary or questions, and then we can read it, and then we can decide when to respond. Here we have a live audience, but we want to appeal to the live audience as well. So if anyone has a question, or not just question, but if you want to add to anything, please feel, you know, raise your hand. We'll get you a mic.
Tell us we're crazy. You know, that's okay too.
So on one theme that we've talked about a lot in private and came up, I think, in every session today, is that Bitcoin is not okay if we don't want to see a future where Bitcoin is just some asset to be held, and it's fine as a financial product, and it's useful, and it can often be attractive to get people curious about it. But if it doesn't actually get used, and if you can't actually build things on it and with it, then it's probably just not going to make it. So what are the types of things? I think you each are coming from like a pretty different perspective. Whenever I ask Steve about these things, he talks about like a new protocol development of like some hacker, you know, over, you know, somewhere else in the world. And then Max tells me about a new company. And so they're very different perspectives on kind of the same thing. How do you take Bitcoin out of just being a culture where it's okay to hold, and it becomes a culture that it's important to use and to build on?
I mean, I'll start by just stating a long-term concern I have, and that's around ETFs. And I'm not an ETF hater. I actually think it's great that there's Bitcoin ETFs. It makes it far more accessible to a large segment of people to be their, you know, to get off zero and be their first ownership of Bitcoin. So I think it's great that ETF exists. But I have noticed a pattern among some friends and colleagues I know who were storing Bitcoin either in self-custody or like on Coinbase, and they've actually decided to move to an ETF to improve their security. They're worried about getting their Coinbase account hacked or making a mistake with self-custody. And I find that alarming because if that's a long-term trend and the vast majority of people and Bitcoin are in ETFs, then the entire Bitcoin project fails. And no matter why you're into Bitcoin, even if the only reason is store of value, which is perfectly valid reason to be into Bitcoin, that value will decline over time. So, you know, if you think through, okay, how would I motivate my friends to not move to Bitcoin? I can talk about self-sovereignty and all this other stuff, but it doesn't really appeal to them right now. And I think that's true for the majority of people, actually. So if there's ways to use Bitcoin, and Bitcoin payments is one, but even like we have Shazan here from Lava, that's another way to use Bitcoin. You can you own Bitcoin and you can use it as collateral to a loan. Lock it up in a smart contract. You don't have to give custody to someone else. And then you get stable coins back to spend. So that's another example of using Bitcoin. So we need Bitcoin payments, things like Lava and other usages of Bitcoin to take off. And then that gives reasons for people, I don't want to lock my Bitcoin up in an ETF because I can't use it then. So I think that, to me, that's the motivation for why this is important.
And things like, we addressed, I think, in December when we were hanging out here about coin swaps and fidelity bonds, which I think is one of the topics that Alex had mentioned. So that's, I think, another example of how you use Bitcoin, right? Like you have to have it can't be in an ETF and in a fidelity bond. It's like one or the other, right?
Yeah. I think, Greg, you invented coin swap, right? Yeah, discovered it. Yes, found it on the ground. So that project is it's super early. I mean, it's still in development. It's not deployed. No one's using it. But it's a good example of not only does it have great privacy protection for people, but a part of the way it works it includes these fidelity bonds because a lot of the privacy projects that exist in this space, you need multiple participants and you need to protect against participants who are trying to defeat the privacy elements of it. And so you can Sybil attack many of these systems. It applies to like all coin joins and could also apply to CoinSwap. So you don't want adversaries involved. And because the whole point is not to reveal your identity, you don't know who's who. So how do you know if there are or not adversaries? So this has a mechanism called fidelity bonds where you lock up Bitcoin for a period of time. So it makes it costly for you to be an adversary. So if such a system became popular and took off, it's just like another example. It has a really cool property because you can earn a yield on your Bitcoin while it's in your cold storage, which is a pretty mind-blowing concept that not only do you not have to give this to another entity to earn yield, or like the Lightning Network, you can keep self-custody and earn yield, but it's in a hot wallet, so there's a security risk you're taking. Here, you can have cold storage, and the reason you're getting a yield is because you've time-locked your Bitcoin, and it can't be spent for some period, like 6 months, say. So the opportunity cost of that money is why you're getting a yield. So if such a system became popular, that would be another reason people would want to take custody of their Bitcoin.
What is the timing on this? Because once you explained that idea to me when I first heard about it a few months ago, I got really excited about it. But it sounds like, I think when I followed up, you said, well, it's kind of early and there's some experiments and stuff. But are we sort of close to being able to productize something like that? Like, is it going to be able to be available as a service? Is it 6 months, 2 years, 10 years?
2 weeks.
Andrew?
Are you just burning it? Like, why was how?
Because the protocol lets you do stuff because you can unlock it on your underneath what you set.
Okay.
Glad we resolved that.
Is that clear to everybody? let's summarize that because I don't know that I've got. Or did you want to say something more? So my understanding is the coin swap is you're pledging and locking your coin and that prevents you from being able, but you become a good trading partner and maybe you get an additional spiff on any kind of trading?
Well, it's a maker taker model. Okay. So to incentivize, I mean, so one party wants to improve their privacy. The other party might want to, but they're motivated by earning money. Mm-hmm. So that's the two parties involved in this coin swap. And on a nice characteristic of coin swap compared to coin join is that there's like a coin join, you can look at the blockchain and there's a pattern there. You can see that, oh, this was almost certainly a coin join. So even though you gain privacy, you can gain privacy through that. You still might face scrutiny in the future. You try to deposit it, you know, at Cash App or Coinbase or whatever, and then they might be like, we don't like the history of these coins. Right. But with a coin swap, you don't get that identifiable pattern in the blockchain. So that's a big benefit with it. So, yeah. So why don't we have this? Why aren't we all using it? I mean, multiple reasons why. I mean, sadly, you know, Alex mentioned Chris Belcher, who's an amazing privacy advocate, but he came across a horrible long COVID health situation. He was also Spiral's funding him as well. And so he just sadly had to stop development. There are some other developers who have picked up the project, but it's just like a lot of open source projects, they take a long time for a variety of reasons, but it's still not, it is progressing, but it's not ready for wallet adoption yet. But even once we get it into wallets and it works, there's still going to be an adoption hurdle because there is an economic cost to doing it. So how much do people actually value privacy? And if the costs are too high, it would attract criminals. It would attract freedom fighters. But both those are like small segments, and it's not like a mainstream type of product. So there's other privacy projects where it's either like it's quite economical, or as Alex mentioned, there might be future technologies that make it you actually save money by participating. That's what I think we need for more widespread adoption.
Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit about Bitcoin as payments. Obviously, there's a lot of interesting use cases for yield. One of those opportunities for yield is Lightning Network yield, you know, if you're routing on the Lightning Network. But to do that, we need people to actually use Bitcoin for payments. And so this is something I think a lot about from just the Bitcoin open source perspective, but also as an investor, because I think there's a huge opportunity to make money in payments. In order for that to work, though, I think first it's important to have the grand context, which is Bitcoin is still a young project. Every year, volatility goes down, adoption goes up. So we're steadily increasing. One of the challenges we've discussed many times on the show is that because the Lightning Network is made of peer-to-peer channels, no one knows how much volume there really is on there. To do that, you have to have data from private nodes and private companies. River just put out another great report. I know, Steve, you've been involved with a lot of that sort of research collection as well. And like Lightning payments are scaling year over year by several 100%, several 1,000% maybe, depending on which report you looked at. But in my mind, if you just take it from a very simple perspective, in order for people to use their Bitcoin, two things need to happen. One, there need to be things that you can only buy in Bitcoin that you really want to buy. Number one, full stop. Number two, it needs to be really easy to use that Bitcoin, and the friction has to come down. So taking each of those sort of pieces, what are examples of things that you can only buy in Bitcoin? Today, I don't think we have great examples. We have a couple. The two best examples I can come up with right now, one is Stacker News. Who here has used Stacker.News before? It's one of my absolute favorite. I'm addicted to this website. It's also one of my major investments. And Stacker News, it's like Reddit, but it used to say, but we pay you Bitcoin. I actually don't think that's the big innovation. The big innovation is pay to post, right? And pay to post, even if it's a one Satoshi cost, what it does is it gets rid of all spam. And that's a really, really important filter that I think a lot of people haven't appreciated yet. Pay to post is a major, major, major innovation. And so that's one example where if you want to participate in the Stacker News economy, you have to use sats today. The second big example is Nostr. Who here has used Nostr? Most people, right? And sort of the value for value zaps you see there, or in Fountain, which also uses Nostr for podcasts now. Those are great examples if you really want to show love to someone that you, whatever, really appreciate. That's a great example. But obviously, those two things, while exciting, are not scaled out yet. We're not talking, you know, millions or even billions of dollars of volume yet. So those are going to continue to grow. But the two areas that I'm most excited about are new experiences that can't be bought anywhere else. One is an idea that we've all discussed a lot and you've actually inspired, I think, both of us on, which is decentralized naming space on top of Bitcoin. That has not emerged yet. Someone's going to build it, something like ENS, but on top of Bitcoin, you could route to a Nostr Pub
and key. With no masters.
With no masters, with no ICANN, with no DNS. That's going to happen one day. And if it's on top of Bitcoin, guess what it's going to be settled in? It's going to be settled in Bitcoin, right? And so that's an example of the kind of thing where you're only going to be able to pay in Bitcoin and people use their Bitcoin.
All right, let me be spicy then. So what do we think and what does the audience think about ordinals and NFTs on Bitcoin?
Rockstar's a fan, I think.
Oh.
It hasn't died, but... I mean,
do I have to be the champion of this in the group? This group?
We got some hands going up. People want to weigh in. What do you got? That's just a thumbs up.
I mean, I like when Bitcoin improves in ways that are unpredictable and permissionless. So hence, I like seeing experimentation in that way. So yeah, I would say heuristically, I like ordinals.
I'd agree. I'm kind of happy that it's happening, but not something I want to be involved with. I'm happy that people can do stuff. They can do innovative stuff and they don't have to ask anybody for permission. That's like really important to me. And I like the fact that that happens.
I have friends that store a tremendous amount of value in Magic the Gathering cards.
Watch out.
I don't. I have no problem with them doing it.
By the way, Alex, we might want to shut some of the shades. Some people are being blinded.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, D++.
Best of you.
There is one more thing, though, that I want to point out that I think is going to be really big for using Bitcoin. And I think this is super, super early, but I'm very bullish on. And that is, I mentioned earlier, one of the reasons I'm so excited about Bitcoin is I think it's energy-backed money. I think one day when Bitcoin is at a steady state, we're going to see that you can, I think, essentially measure it in joules. And it's going to be a percentage of global GDP that is necessary to secure the monetary supply. And so one area that I expect to get really hot here for Bitcoin settlement over time is for energy. And so there are companies like Sunoda and Satoshi Energy, which are already starting to do real-time energy settlement. So imagine streaming Satoshis 4 kilowatt hours. And I think a sort of simpler version, those are kind of at the industrial scale or the commercial scale, mm-hmm. is GPUs. So the next big thing, if anyone's out there looking for something to build right now, the thing that I most want to see is payment gate, perhaps the L402, shout out to Lalu and Jordy from Fusats, access to GPUs with Satoshis. If you want to give an agent a little budget that says go out there, solve problems and make a lot more money and spin up GPUs as you need it, that's something you can only use Bitcoin for.
So let's talk about AI and payments. We've talked about AI in several segments today. I think we all, like, it's quite clear that it's explosive and going to change the world. AI agents, we're just starting to see what they can do. It just seems quite obvious to me that there's going to need to be payments between AI agents. And you can imagine, like, you as a human might have an AI agent instructed to do things for you, but then it might decide on its own to work with other AI agents to accomplish the task. It might need to pay them. So what do we see those payments looking like? And the question going through my head is, why Bitcoin versus stablecoins? And I think it's an important question for this audience. It can't simply just be, oh, we're Bitcoiners and Bitcoin's better money and the dollar sucks. That's not gonna change things in the near term. I instinctively do believe there are specific situations where Bitcoin is the only money that can be used. So what are those? So, like, one I was mentioning earlier this morning that maybe is how it plays out is, like, okay, I have an AI agent. It's connected to 10 other AI agents, one of which was developed by someone in a country that Stripe doesn't support, or the US government sanctions.
Or the developer's 12 years old,
or, you know, and so even if just one of the 10 that my AI agent is connecting to and needing to pay requires Bitcoin, my AI agent will need to support Bitcoin. So even if it's a tiny percentage, I think the sort of the network effect will require all AI agents to support Bitcoin payments, even if it's a small fraction of the actual payments. And that would be a monster win for Bitcoin, because the payment volume should be quite large and very high growth rate. So even if Bitcoin's 5% of that, that would be like massive compared to today's almost negligible payment volume. So yeah, Greg?
I think another ingredient you could add to that is autonomy. So if you're imagining these agents using stablecoin, those stablecoins can't be irreversible. There's always going to be, like in Tether, for example, funds can be frozen, reissued. And so if you're trying to make an agent that is completely autonomous or just largely autonomous, that it's working on its own, it's not going to have the mechanisms in it to deal with, like, what is it going to go to court to try to fight to get its money back? Right? It can't do that. And in like, an autonomous AI is real science fiction and maybe not that interesting to talk about, but there are many degrees of autonomy. And when you get to the lower levels of degrees of autonomy, it's really about the cost of operations. And so if these AIs are going to be competing against each other for the lowest prices, they can't really have any processing costs to go through and like fight a reverse transaction. And that's a place that an irreversible payments mechanism is extremely advantaged.
Yeah, it would not surprise me if stablecoins turn out to be a first step and ultimately like an onboarding or a marketing way to get people building these tools and using something that appears to be cryptographically secure. And once you've built the applications, there's going to be somebody who gets rugged. And when that rugging happens, that's going to be the best marketing ever for there's a way to not get rugged. Take that stablecoin thing you were doing and flip it out.
Yeah, I agree with both of those. And I really like your point a lot, Greg. I think to me, I mean, I actually think it is very interesting to talk about. The question that I'm most interested in is, you know, what does it look like when you evolve life versus design life? And, you know, designing is very shallow. And that's what we're seeing in all of the AI stuff happening right now. It's very fragile. But evolution, that's how we all got here, or at least as best we know. And I think, you know, one of the ideas that's really shifted my mind, Dhruv Bansal has a really beautiful idea around the idea. He said that I think a Bitcoin key is going to be, if you think that Bitcoin is the digital representation of energy, it's like digital ATP, and you need some kind of a membrane to separate inside from outside in that world. And sort of his hypothesis was it's going to be a Bitcoin key. I actually now think it's going to be a Nostr key that controls a subfleet of Bitcoin keys via Nostr Wallet Connect, I think, is what I'm currently most excited about. And the thing that I think that could really pop off here is if you literally had one of these keys and you said, here is one Bitcoin. I want you to go out there. Ideally, you know, don't hurt anyone, like maybe some Asimov type rules or something. But I want you to go into a free and open environment and solve people's problems such that they give you Bitcoin. And if you think about it, by the way, how do you align AI or intelligence in a way that it doesn't paperclip maximize us? One, I like Elon's idea of truth maximizing, but I also think a way is just like stack sats. Because if it's going to paperclip maximize us and we have the sats, it should actually be doing services to get our sats, right? And so I think one of the most interesting also things I'm interested in investing in is who's going to build these early, like the real DAO, like autonomous organizations that are out there with Bitcoin keys solving problems. And to do that, they need to be in an open environment where they can pay for their own GPUs and solve problems. And I think that's probably going to be on Nostr or somewhere where there are Bitcoin payments accepted.
So we talk about all of these ideas of like AI and Bitcoin and Lightning payments in the very abstract, but there's a concrete example that inspired me in the last day, and it kind of took me down a path of kind of imagining a much bigger, much better world. So
the plane game?
The plane. So
I thought you were talking about the gnosis of Goetze, but that's coming next.
So I was sitting in a cafe with Steve yesterday, and I said, you got to go check out this thing, fly.pieter.com. And there's a guy, he's kind of a somewhat notable indie hacker, not involved with Bitcoin or anything, but he builds a bunch of little projects and launches them. And in this one that he launched, he built entirely with Claude 3.7 Sonnet, I think, and Grok in the back end. So he writes code, but he didn't write code for this. He deployed the thing, and it's a flight simulator that is a multiplayer. he didn't write any of the code. And you can like take off in a 3D environment and shoot things down and see other people.
I made it to Mars.
Yes. Steve's first thing was, I'm getting out of here.
The rock is cooked.
We could use you on Earth still. There's a little badge in the side that you can sign up and pay $30. It's just US dollars. It's just, you know, probably Stripe or something. But it shows kind of the combination of how AI coding simplifies things. And there's a desire for payments right there. And this is one example. Now, today, I don't know if you saw the latest today, somebody was inspired by that, and they launched kind of a ground simulator, similar kind of aesthetic, but they literally must have done it in 24 hours, right? And now they're selling something. So I think, you know, we talk about the use cases we understand, right? Like go to Bitcoin Park and pay for something, you know, buy a beer or something, or, you know, go buy a block clock or something. Those are easy to understand, but the things that are going to be interesting are the ones that we don't really understand yet. And so whenever I see something like that, that kind of inspires me, because I feel like, you know, like Roblox is a phenomenon. Kids build Roblox games. There's already payments set for that. And they do it and they make money just building, you know, kind of amateur little games. I think the whole web can now be a playland like that. And I think AI, you know, whether it's centralized or decentralized or open source, I think that problem, I want us to get to the world where it's all open source and available, you know, to run locally on everybody's machine with the very best models. We may not be there today, but let's focus also some attention on the great things that people are already able to do with the closed stuff and think about plans and paths. Maybe China gives us that gift, but the paths to be able to do those things, you know, today. You don't have to squint too hard to see that.
Something you mentioned to me yesterday was about the concept that I guess some people are talking about, where the a single entrepreneur who can build $1 billion of value with like basically without venture capital.
Yeah.
So what does that world look like? And you're relating it to Bitcoin. So
yeah. Well, I think like it's part of our bridge discussion, right? Because we're saying like Silicon Valley, I think we probably swim in it so much that we don't even recognize it, but this town is a venture capital town, right? That's what feeds everybody. That's the fuel to build the companies that we have. And that's a great tool. And there's great companies that get built that way. And we're involved in small scale, helping that ecosystem. But there's also a lot of new tools that come out that empower individuals in ways that you never have before. So if you wanted to build a game studio, you had an idea for a cool game, it's really hard to raise venture capital for a game studio. And it's really hard to raise any money for a game studio. But it's hard then to get like a team of designers and engineers and people together to do that. Well, now you don't have to deal with that. You just come up with the idea. And if you have a good idea and it sticks and it hits, it can create something that a billion people could use. And it doesn't necessarily require the same kind of venture capital tool that we've used in the past. It's not to say that venture capital is not a good tool. It's a good tool for certain types of things. But the way AI coding is working, it's really allowing so much more to be built by individuals. So I think we're just going to see proliferation of so many more things. And that's what I think Bitcoin and Lightning as a payment mechanism will be. Because when you've got things that nobody's ever heard of or seen before, built by people who might not have access to our system, they might not be old enough to accept payments if they do have access to our system, but they can now put something out in the world. And because we have this open monetary network, they can start to receive payments. I think we're going to see kids who build something great, and we're going to see people who are all over the world who have a great idea. They can now express it without the need to get through sort of the capital and recruiting thresholds that you have in the past. So I'm super excited about that. And I think there's great uses of venture capital still if you want to build rockets and space systems and stuff like that. But I think there's also a new way that's emerging, and it's not the default anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that if you're building a quantum computer like in the old days, probably VC makes sense. But if you're not, like, I would love to see a day where venture capital is no longer necessary. I think as an addendum to the software engineering example, I think this is true for any kind of creativity. If AI goes in, I mean, it can go in a very dark direction or a very light direction. A very dark direction is we all sit here and just scroll on our phones and we're more addicted than ever. And like, that would suck. And for some people, that's probably what's going to happen. But a very light direction, I think, is people are just more creative in general as software engineers, as artists, as musicians. And I think that, again, the more you have things open, the more you can innovate with how those projects come together. So one of the things I'm really excited about is this idea of sort of the remix economy between humans and agents. On Nostr, there is a project called Wavelake, which I love, but I'm forgetting the name now. Stemster. Oh, and yeah. On Stemster, you can have like a track and then someone else can say, well, I've got these drums and I took my, you know, my vocals and I put it on top of that. Like one of the things, and then you can have split payments flow through with Lightning or eCash or some of these technologies that we're working with anyone. Like, and it could be a pseudonym, right? Maybe it is a 12-year-old and maybe the guy that created the beat is actually an agent. And, you know, maybe the guy that gave us the sick horn is Steve, but under a pseudonym and we don't know it.
Moneyball.
Yeah, exactly. Moneyballs is coming out there now. And who knows, right? Like you would have all these different things and they all can link together and split. But my hope of if this all goes well and building this in an open way with open payment systems and open data is that it will unleash human creativity in companies, in art, and 10x the amount of it out there. And if it goes the other way, then, I'd be pretty sad.
Rockstar Dev?
Yeah, I wanted to go more in the direction of like humans. Expand on what DK was saying, and maybe from my personal perspective, because being like an immigrant developer that didn't have connections, but got lucky, got connected with Miles, through Miles with Steve, then with Jack. Like my question also from perspective of you doing this space is like, what can developers like me that are now like, I don't know, 7 years back, what can they do? Like, what are the best practices that you see so that they highlight their work, their code, and get connected with spaces like this? And then as well, from the other side, what is it that you three see that developers that are outside of these communities, Silicon Valley, are not doing well when it comes to, you know, promoting their projects, getting connected? Because again, like, Steve, the way you support us devs is amazing. Like, I don't know how you do it. You have like 100 meetings a week. And then you, Max, you're investing in various projects, LMBits, things like that. So I want to hear your perspectives on this topic.
I love Serbia, first of all.
Someone does, finally. You and Alex Gladstein, yeah. But only because of Serbia.
Let's see. I mean, one of the beauties of open source is that it doesn't matter if you're here in the Presidio, you're in Serbia, or anywhere else on Earth. As long as you have an internet connection, you can contribute.
Yep.
So that is a beautiful thing about open source. And yeah, where I sit at Spiral, how do I discover new talented people? Because a goal of ours, I mean, I already knew like Greg and Andrew and like OG Bitcoin devs, but I was really interested in like bringing new talent to Bitcoin. So how do we discover those people? One of the best ways is to look at who's contributing to open source projects. So I GitHub watch like 24 or more open source projects. It creates a monster email inbox for me. but it's a really quick way for me to skim through projects, see what the activity is. And see who the new developers are. So all of a sudden, like some NIM comes in and I'm like, ooh, you know, who's this? And this person's asking really smart questions and wow, they're really cranking yeah. code out. And oh, they actually chipped in and helped review other people's code. That's good, you know, good culture, good spirit. So many developers that Spiral funded and it's their first time funding in Bitcoin were discovered that way. So and that would apply to anyone anywhere in the world. And another nice thing that has happened with the Spiral Grant Program, like Block as a company can only hire full-time people in, I don't know, something like 20 countries, something like that. But there's just like, you know, a company has to consider like legal ramifications and there's just all this overhead, which totally makes sense from the company's perspective, but it's unfortunate, right? But with the grant program, Spiral's been able to fund developers in like a couple dozen countries, and we'd love to do even more. So that's another way that we've been able to expand that access.
And I think a big piece of it is, can you inspire people and show them that there is a path?
So one of the things, you know, we don't have an official hackathon to announce yet, but I was pitching Steve in the car yesterday. I was like, yeah, I've been using Replit Agent to build things. And when you get sort of stuck where you need to like do a Google Auth, there's like a form to accept your Google Auth credentials. And when you need to do a email, there's SendGrid, there's a form that Replit has. And I said, there's got to be a form for when you want to accept Bitcoin payments, right, in Replit. So we haven't talked to Amjad yet, but like let's create a Replit payment hackathon and let's show off what can be done and make Presidio Bitcoin center stage for where that stuff gets done. And then maybe there's a kid anywhere, maybe Serbia, you know, the 12-year-old in Serbia who could be inspired and say, oh, I can see what you can do and the tools are easy. Here's my contribution. And I think those are the kinds of things like if we can create, I mean, that's what creating media, we can help inform and educate and inspire people about how great this ecosystem can be.
So I'd love to keep going, but I think we need to wrap up. We'll wrap this up. Did Alex already hop over? Oh, Alex is there. Do you want to wrap us up and for the day and tell people what the next?
Yeah. Hats off.